And welcome to the Climate Minute, your source for insight and perspective on global warming news. My name is Ted McIntyre, and this show is for the week of February 25th, 2021. Today, we're pleased to be joined by Tim Cronin, who's the State Director for Climate Exchange. How are you doing, Tim?
Good, good. Thanks for having me on.
Tim's pen is still steaming from writing the Massachusetts Policy Roundup, the weekly newsletter of things going on in the State House, which you can subscribe to if you want. But anyway, Tim, it's great to have you here. So let me try and set up the issue at hand, right? And you can correct me if I get things wrong. So there are the new Massachusetts legislative session is underway. At the beginning of the year, Governor Baker released various kinds of roadmaps in quotation marks about how Massachusetts will regain a leadership role in climate things. In particular, there is a roadmap for the year 2030 about how we're going to reduce our carbon emissions. In parallel with the governor's good efforts, the state legislature has passed actual legislation. So it's not a roadmap, but there's an actual climate legislation going back and forth. It kind of mirrors the governor's roadmap, but it's a little bit different, and it's a source of contention all by itself between the legislative climate bill, the climate roadmap bill, and the governor's roadmap document, right? That's all well and good. That's progressing on its own path. But one of the questions comes as to how to implement this vision. So that there's the climate roadmap bill, which has goals and some infrastructure in it. But for example, how is this all this stuff going to get paid for is, of course, a critical issue, right? And so that has led us to the point where there is a new bill been presented to the Massachusetts State House called the Green Future Act. And that is the subject of, I think, what we want to talk about, the Green Future Act, right, Tim? So tell me. Do you agree with that story, or is that more or less the right thing?
That's a great story. You touched base on all the many crazy things that have happened in Massachusetts on climate over these past few months. It seems like years. I mean, we usually don't get this much movement on climate after a 2-year session, let alone 2 months.
Right.
I think the persistent issue that we're going to have to face after we, you know, pass the climate bill that's still before the legislature, but is going to go back to the governor soon. You know, once we start implementing the governor's climate and clean energy and climate plan that you mentioned as well, and start to try to attack the issue of getting to our 2030 target, our 2050 target, and then everyone in between, the persistent issue we're going to face is how do we fund the critical infrastructure and green investments that we need to fund if we're going to get there. And, you know, frankly, without a clear path for sustainably and more importantly, equitably raising that money, you know, we risk either being forced into doing, you know, regressive taxes or especially missing on the opportunity to create jobs and local prosperity here in the state. So I'm very excited to talk about that. Yeah.
Tell me, when you say critical infrastructure, so there are two words, critical infrastructure. Mm. What was that? I mean, I think a bridge is a critical infrastructure, right? In the climate sense, what things come under that?
Oh yeah, I mean that's less bridges and roads and more, you know, infrastructure for the 21st century. Things that, you know, decarbonize our electricity sector, you know, making sure that we have less coal and natural gas and we promote clean energy like, you know, solar and offshore wind. But it also means that we're electrifying our transportation sector and our heating sector. You know, mm-hmm. These are two sectors that account for the vast majority of our emissions. In some areas, especially the heating sector, are areas where once you start getting investments in homes that aren't energy efficient, those last for at least 30 years, and it becomes harder to try to reduce emissions there. And so that can look like heat pumps. That can look like, new advancements in, paying for those new advancements in mm-hmm. energy efficiency in homes. That can also look like public transit, expanding the use of public transit, or even, EVs for all people, and not just right. those who can afford them now. So in that sense,
critical infrastructure means those literally in the infrastructure of our buildings, the infrastructure like probably power lines, I mean, all kinds of stuff that are directly relevant to climate issues that need to be considered, right? And these are actual physical things we're talking about, building things, right? Changing out heat pumps and building windmills and things, right?
Yeah. I mean, and a lot of the focus, rightfully so, over this past session, these last 2 months of action, has been on setting these really ambitious goals and creating the mechanisms for, guiding the governor in the setting of climate policy towards these ambitious goals. But we still need to do the actual things that get us to those goals. You know, like you said, create the physical things that get us there. And, you know, we need to do this at the state level. We need to make sure we have these kind of statewide, you know, green infrastructure, green investments. And we also need to make sure those trickle down to the local level as well, as much as possible, because, you know, our cities and towns are the front lines of climate change. And they're also places that can benefit pretty significantly, especially in this economy, from, you know, a much needed boost in investment and funding at the local level. So how does the bill
get, how much money does it get? How does it get it? So let's say under this bill, again, correct me if I'm wrong, there's two sort of concepts. One is you got to get the money, right? So somehow we need to find ways to generate the revenue to have the money. And then we need to distribute that money and get it to the right people at the right time. So let's talk first about, how do we unlock the money that we need to get our hands on?
Yeah. So that's a great question that's central to this bill. So the Green Future Act fund raises money in two ways, and it raises actually up to roughly about $10 billion by 2030, which is a significant amount of money. So from 2023 to 2030, you know, Climate Exchange Education Research, who I work for, our phenomenal research team estimates that will raise about $10 billion, possibly more, but about that much. So the first and the most robust source of that income is from closing the state's polluter loophole. You know, right now, out-of-state fossil fuel importers, big polluters in the state, you know, only a small fraction of them are actually held accountable for the damage that they cause to our environment and our public health. And those are the folks in the electric sector. And the reason for this is something that you've heard of, and I'm sure the listeners have as well, which is REGI, the Regional Greenhouse Gas Initiative. It was created in 2008. It's been updated a few times. And it's a regional cap and trade program that essentially puts a carbon price on electricity in the electric sector. So we have that now. But as we mentioned earlier, there's the transportation sector and there's the heating sector. And we're moving towards having some type of, holding polluters accountable in the transportation sector with the Transportation and Climate Initiative, TCI, which, mm-hmm. if moving forward, is going to be implemented in 2023. But the one thing that we have not had a conversation about is getting that last sector, the heating sector, covered by some kind of polluter fee, some kind of way of expanding it, essentially existing programs that we already have in the state to these other sectors, specifically the heating sector. And by doing that, you're able to make sure that only 7% of the pollution in the state by 2025 will not be covered by any pollution fee. And that actually raises quite a lot of money. That's $500 to $750 million per year at the lowest end of the estimate. And
this is for fossil fuels that come into the state.
Yeah, this is a fee that's placed on the importers of fossil fuels.
When we say importers, that's a funny word for inside the United States. So we're importing into sort of metaphorically from outside of Massachusetts into Massachusetts. It's not from an international importation thing, right? But they're bringing across state lines.
It could be international. It's more likely domestic. So it's anything that's coming into the state. It's essentially what we call is wholesale, distributors of fossil fuels. And it's placed on them at that level, largely to make sure there's not kind of complex administrative costs and to do the best we can to keep them away from consumers. Now, the thing to note is, and no one can ever deny that, is that when you place, a fee or some kind of cost upon wholesalers, they're going to transfer that cost back down the supply chain to consumers. And that's part of the reason and part of the thinking for having this policy of closing the loophole is it allows for fossil fuels to be more accurately priced compared to their damage to the environment. At the same time, we also need to hold and center the concept and the knowledge and the reality that if you do that, those who are the most vulnerable in our society, those on fixed incomes, those who make lower income, the lower end side of the income spectrum, are going to be less likely and have fewer resources to be able to transition to an EV or get a heat pump or do any of the other kind of smaller things to be able to get off of fossil fuels and save money from transitioning. And so what this bill also does is it provides green dividends to all vulnerable residents. Anyone who is in the lower side of the income spectrum, anyone with the low 40% of the on the bottom 40% by income in the state, would receive a green dividend that they could use to cover those short-term increases in costs that, you know, we're all going to see from the shift in our global economy away from fossil fuels and towards renewables. Mm-hmm. And so in this way, this green dividend allows for us to both close this polluter loophole and ensure that our most vulnerable citizens are held harmless to that cost. Mm-hmm. And this is something that's done in California and in other states as well. There's kind of robust ways of returning money back in the form of essentially rebates back to consumers.
And is this closing this loophole, is this money sort of tagged for green investments, or is it just going to the general fund? Or, I mean, not just, that's a very reasonable thing for taxes to do, to go into a general fund, right? But is it tagged for green things, or how does that work?
Yeah, so similar to how, you know, tolls and the gas tax now go back to transportation, this would go back towards green infrastructure fully. There would be no move into the general fund. It would go towards, like I mentioned before, you know, two of the big things that we need to be doing, which is funding these statewide big green infrastructure projects, you know, like the MBTA updates, mm-hmm. Like big state programs to be able to provide rebates to all consumers, renters, and homeowners. To be able to subsidize the cost of heat pumps or other heating technology. But the money would also go to local cities and towns, too, to pay for investments on that level, too.
The bill, I think, mentioned something called a green bonding program. Does the revenue that we're picking up from closing the loophole go into this green bonding thing? And please explain. I mean, I think the green bonding thing is a way to loan money at very good interest rates to cities and towns to make capital improvements, right? That's the whole idea of a city taking out a bond. Please tell me what I got wrong there. How does the green bonding thing work?
Yeah. And so I mentioned before that there's two ways that we raise, you know, that $10 billion figure. One is closing the state's polluter loophole. The other is through what we're calling a 21st century green bonding program, you know, making green bonding work for the needs of, you know, investing in the green economy and, you know, achieving some of the goals of the Green New Deal. So the way that the green bonding would work is it's separate from the polluter loophole, is it would use the existing apparatus of the states on bonding. You know, currently the state can raise upwards of a few billion dollars annually to pay for roads and bridges and big capital projects. You know, think of it like, you know, like a school or a bridge, you know, something you pay for once and then you're allowed to, like, you know, take it and use, like you mentioned, access low interest rates and pay a little bit over the course of multiple, usually 30 years.
A Massachusetts state bond is essentially a loan that the state takes from a big bank, right? And then it bills whatever it bills, and over the course of decades pays it back, right? So similarly, a green bonding thing would be significant loans taken out
That's exactly right. And it's not just banks, it's the entire bond market. I mean, municipal bonds and state bonds are pretty mature market, and some of them have been able to you know, tackle the issues associated with, you know, paying for green infrastructure before. And what this is proposing is creating a dedicated way for lawmakers, when they're looking at things like 100% renewable or some of the really interesting stuff going on with the Jobs for Justice Act that have been mm-hmm. proposed, or any of the other legislation that we frankly need in the state of Massachusetts. So lawmakers, when they look at these legislation and they say, look, this has some funding, but we need more, they can access this green bonding program within the Green Future Act in order to put money directly toward those programs to fund the critical needs that they are trying to address as well. So it's not anything radical. It's just saying, look, we need more money going to green infrastructure that reduces emissions, and here is an easy way for lawmakers to be able to do that.
Interesting. So the that's how the state will get the money. I'd like to have another show to talk about how we invest that money, right? So again, there's two sides. We get the money. This is all now basically the means, right? So the means to actually execute some of the roadmap stuff. And that would be then how we invest that money. So, but in 25 words or less, what are we going to do once we get the money? What are you going to do with it? And then we'll come back in detail at another time.
Yeah, we're going to invest in cities, we're going to invest in towns, and we're going to invest in specifically environmental justice neighborhoods and populations in across the state, and ensure throughout all of that that we're creating good-paying local jobs. And that's the top line. I look forward to talking to you more about that.
That's great. All right. Well, so what we'll do is we will put up some links to the Green Future Act, House Bill 1972 from Representative Bill Driscoll Jr. We'll put up links to that so you can read about it. Tim, is this thing subject to, is it useful to call about it yet, or is it still too early for people listening to this show to call up their rep and say, hey, back up that that Green Futures Act?
No, it's definitely the time. We have extended our co-sponsorship kind of timelines in the state, so feel free to call your state representative or even state senator and say, co-sponsor the Green Future Act. And if you have any other questions, you can go to greenfuturenowma.org for all the information you need. So,
and I was just, the other thing I should mention is that MCANs, one of the coalitions that MCAN is the Mass Power Shift, I think it's called, right? No, Mass Power Forward, is having a virtual lobby day on March 4th, right? And you can still sign up for it. They're doing a great job. They're offering a couple of Zoom trainings so you feel good about talking to your Congress, your representative over Zoom. You can talk about these issues. I think it's incredibly satisfying to talk to your representative about these issues. It makes you feel much better. I recommend, what I'll do is I'll put into the show notes the links to how you can sign up for that virtual lobbying day. There you go. So if you have any questions, please send us a question to podcast@massclimateaction.net. Let us know what we ought to be talking about. Of course, you can listen to the show on your smartphone using any of the modern podcast distribution apps, which you should tell your friends to use as you tell them to listen to the Climate Minute. Spread the word. We want to thank our good friend D.R. Tucker for his continuing research support to keep us up to date on everything that's happening. We want to close where we always close, by saying that we recognize the necessity of personal accountability, that we accept responsibility for building a durable future, and that we believe it's our patriotic duty as citizens to speak out. Because of that, we have to insist that the United States transform its energy sector over the next decade under a just and equitable plan that uses regulation, investment, and a price on carbon to safeguard our future. So, Tim, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thanks to everyone for listening. We'll talk again soon. Bye-bye.
Very cool.